It's Tuesday, September 1st, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a very proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Here, I've got a great show for you tonight. Yes, you know what time it is. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
Go flight.
Music bed.
Go flight.
Microphone.
Go flight.
Video feed.
Go flight.
Web browser.
Go flight.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go flight.
Interflux Todism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran, and make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out the archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. Get subscribed as well via that RSS feed. That will get you the shows delivered directly to your mobile media player. Either via iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, or whatever podcatcher you may use. I want to welcome the exploding BlackBerry user audience. I mean, I am overwhelmed by the number of you that have subscribed to the show in the last month using your BlackBerries. I don't know where you're finding the show, but welcome to the podcast. You guys, I mean, this has been the biggest explosion in show numbers in, I would say, a year. So you guys have really turned it on. Thanks for subscribing. Hey, tell me where you're finding the show, because we're trying to figure out where you're all coming from. But I'm glad you're here, and of course, welcome to the podcast. I want to, of course, give a warm welcome to all the new listeners, that no matter where you've came from, and of course, a welcome to all of the longtime listeners, all of the Hana that are out there. Of course, Ohana here in Hawaii means family, and you, if you're a new listener, no matter where you've came from, you're now part of our greater Oahu, Ohana. And, of course, I want to welcome listeners from 155 countries worldwide that tune into the show twice weekly. Hey, you can get more information on the show each and every week by signing up for our newsletter. That'll get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. You'll find the newsletter link on the website. Sign up for that, and you'll have everything that I talk about today, including all the listener links, everything I've covered, little tidbits and stuff that I put in there. So sign up for the newsletter. Well, I've just got off a big, big weekend here in Honolulu. The family did a little mini staycation. You know, how can you go on vacation in Hawaii, right? Living in Hawaii, you're already, well, quite literally, on vacation 24 hours a day. But we loaded the kids up a Saturday afternoon after the Tech Podcast Roundtable. And we decided to take them, well, my son was already downtown with the, well, he's, let me back up a little bit. On Friday night, there was a competition starting for my son's halau. Now, a halau in Hawaiian is basically a group of hula dancers that all belong to a central organization. And so my son, who is 12, belonged to a young men's halau, and they performed Friday night and also on Sunday afternoon. So I wasn't able to go down Friday. My wife was down there and watched the contest on Friday. We loaded the kids up Saturday, went down to the Hilton Hawaiian Village, stayed at the hotel overnight Saturday night. We'll talk about that in a second as well. And then we also took some time, of course, Sunday, and then attended the actual live competition. So the Kumo, who is the instructor of the halau, told us that we would definitely want to stay around for the award ceremony, and because he felt they had done very, very well and had a chance of placing very high. So I had seen a couple of the performances during the day of some of their some of the folks that they were competing against, and they were very, very good. They came on and did a great their particular hula that they did was done very well. And I be honest with you, I don't know how they grade any of this stuff. I think it involves Hawaiian language, costume, the way they dance, synchronization. There's a whole bunch of factors that go into it. But I'm not by any means a hula expert. So when it came to announcing the winners, now they're involved in a basically young adult division. They won it. Couldn't believe it. They were static, screaming, jumping up and down, and I was pretty happy. I think I was screaming and jumping up and down as well. So, so pretty proud dad Sunday afternoon. And then, of course, we've just came off a big week with my daughter having been designated the concert master for her orchestra for her school. So, yeah, kids had a great week. And we had a great time down at the Hilton Hawaiian Village contest. We didn't have necessarily such a great time at the Hilton Hawaiian. And I have written a lengthy blog post on my personal blog about my stay down at the Hilton. And involves party crashers at pools, mold in the hotel room, bathroom, a horrible breakfast. It was, I'm sorry. I have to say this very publicly. If you're coming to Hawaii, I would not, and I repeat, I would not recommend the Hilton Hawaiian Village at this time. They have really slipped. I felt that I was getting a 2-star treatment in a supposed 4 or 5-star hotel. You know, and you guys know I stay at Hilton's a lot. I stay over 60 days a year in Hilton's. Just came off a fabulous trip to San Jose, actually Silicon Valley, but I stayed at the San Jose Hilton at the convention center, and it was a great stay. It really, really was. I had a fantastic time there. Bandwidth was good. Rooms were perfect. Everything top-notch, and then I come home to Hawaii, and we go on just a little overnight. Now, here in Hawaii, they have this what's called a kamaina rate. You're a local, you can get a local rate. I think we paid $163 to stay overnight. Still not necessarily cheap, but maybe $20 or $30 less than what probably the regular hotel guests were paying. But I was not happy. I really, really wasn't. Now, the hotel took care of the mold. But that's a story in amongst itself, and you guys will have to go over to my personal blog at toddblog.com and read that. I don't give that domain out very often because I don't put a lot over there, but I do have a pretty good write-up, and if you guys want more information, feel free to do so. Let me make an adjustment on a camera here. Yeah, that's better. I had a camera that had me almost all the way off the side of the screen. Okay, so anyway, great weekend back here, and got a lot of work done today. My Los Angeles trip is happening the week of September 14th. So I'm looking to do a meetup probably in Santa Ana. That would be my plan. I'm staying in the southern part of L.A. Actually, I'm not even really in L.A. proper, but I'll be in the Santa Ana area. So looking forward to doing a meetup sometime on the week of September 14th, and I'm having meetings in L.A. all week, the week of September 14th. Now, today just popped up. I'm going to have a probably very, very likely, I'm going to have an East Coast trip the week of September 28th. So I'm going to go a week, be home a week, go for another week. And I'm going to be out. I don't know if it's going to be possibly Pennsylvania. So I will keep you advised on that as that firms up. But I'll definitely be on the East Coast. Well, it looks like pretty sure I'll be on the East Coast for a week, starting the week of September 28th. I need to check and see if there's any pod camps or what's going on. Maybe I can hit one of those as I'm running through. Hey, I want to just give a quick mention here. I forgot to do on the last show, our intro winner. Well, obviously, we have a new intro for the podcast. Runs about 13, 14 seconds longer than the old one did. The old one was 32 seconds, and actually my audio on this one where I can cut in is at about 43, 44. Not too bad. I like it so far. Positive response. I want to give a large, big applause to Joe Fusco. He's going to get a Zune HD, and he submitted 4 different entries, folks. So he really wanted that Zune HD. Congratulations to Joe. And Joe, we may have a small tweak suggestion. You'll have to listen to the end of the show because a listener made a comment, and I have to agree, there's just one small thing missing from the intro that we're going to have to figure out where we can work it in. So we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. Okay, being this is September 1st, I do want to thank, of course, the sponsors here of the show. Each month, I take a few extra minutes to talk about GoDaddy and GoToMeeting. You guys know that GoDaddy has been with us from really almost the very beginning. June of 2005, they came on as a sponsor and have dedicatedly been here month after month and supporting the show. And really, a lot of the stuff that I've done in the podcasting space would not be possible today without them. And I want to thank all of you for your continued support and the support you made last month to GoDaddy and using my promo codes and so forth. And of course, if you are looking for a domain name, virtual dedicated server, dedicated box, shared hosting account, really GoDaddy's where it's at. It's where you need to go. It's where you should send your friends. And of course, share my codes so that they can save big money. And I've got a bunch of them, and you can really get to those via geeknewscentral.com. And there'll be a link on the website that shows GoDaddy codes. Go over there and find the code that serves you the best. That Todd20 code, that's for 1 year shared hosting accounts. That's a great one to use. I love you guys when you guys use it. I really do. It really helps the show a lot. So Todd20, 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. ComSales, a great one for .com renewals. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. And, of course, thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor. And just as well, GoToMeeting. Now, this past weekend, we had another Tech Podcast Roundtable. Andy McCaskey from SDRnews.com and Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine.com were presenters. I put a little presentation together as well. So I've got that all edited. It's actually pushed to the server. I just need to put the blog post up. So hopefully after I get the show done tonight, I'll be punching the updating the links at techpodcast.com. You can check out the presentation. Andy did a very cool demo on EC2. Now, I really didn't have a clue on how it was to set up an Amazon EC2 instance. And he took us through a good demo on that, some tools. Jeffrey turned us on to a very cool software product that if you're a WordPress, Drupal, Joomla user, basically it's a software application that allows you to really build a template for your site in just a matter of moments. And I'm going to say you guys are going to have to go over to techpodcast.com and get the full info for that. And then I did information on tiny URLs or short URLs. So some great topics and 1 hour and 9 minutes worth of tech geekiness that you just can't find anywhere else. So I'll have that up again tonight at techpodcast.com. So GoToMeeting, obviously the sponsor for that event, sponsor for this show as well. And if you're looking for a way to do an online conferencing meeting, this is really the only way to do it. And, you know, you can meet online in an instant, send someone an email with the link. They just launch their browser and the application loads. You can be on via voice IP, so you don't even have to pick up a telephone and dial. You just do it through a microphone on your computer, and you can have an online meeting with someone. They see what you see on your computer screen. You can do demos. You can do video clips. You name it, you can do it. And GoToMeeting.com, you get a free 30-day demo. GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. And again, thanks for GoToMeeting and GoDaddy for being longtime sponsors here of the show. And it's we're really pleased to have them. And of course, want to thank all of you for your longtime support. Right, let me look at my little list here. Oh, hey, we got a $50 gift certificate to give away. I went through and counted up the time capsule entries, and we had 33 entries. Now, I had hoped for a little more, but 33 people probably made a very good investment because I actually don't have the time capsule back here tonight. We'll have it up in an upcoming show because I'm doing some final touches to it. But those 33 people's entries are going on a USB stick. And will actually be printed as well, but we're going to put them in a USB stick because I think that'll hold up better than paper will over the next 5 years or until we reach show 1,000. But at the 1,000th show, I would expect that probably one of those 33 submissions will have a chance at probably $1,000. Kind of makes sense, right? 1,000th show, $1,000, 33 entries. Pretty good odds for those submitted entries for our time capsule. But our winner of our $50 gift certificate is William Anderson from Dallas, Texas. And, of course, on one of the previous shows, we've already mentioned that the great state of Texas has the largest number of Geek News Central listeners. So congratulations to William Anderson from Dallas, Texas, for his $50 gift certificate. So got that out of the way. Hey, if you still want to submit your time capsule entries, nope, too late. We're just going to cut it off. it wouldn't be fair to the 33 that have submitted, would it? So we'll get those locked up. I should have some nice official ceremony of locking the actual time capsule. Well, it's not going to be that fancy, okay? It's not like we're putting $1,000 into a time lock device or something. Okay. Let me go ahead and bring up the browser here so we get into the show notes of what I've actually got to talk to you about tonight in the world of tech. We'll get moving here. And for those of you that are new to the show, we always spend some time up front in the beginning of the podcast just kind of talking about what's going on here. And, of course, a little time, so sometimes a little bit about the podcasting space and so forth. All right, at the end of the show, I do have a couple of voicemails, one that's very short, so it might be one of these robot callers. So we'll have a couple of voicemails at the end. If you have comments on today's show, you can send those to or call in at +1-619-342-7365. If you have comments on the show, always send them to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. All right, and we'll have some email messages as well. All right, first of all, my heart goes out to all of you that are dealing with the fires in Los Angeles right now. I had gotten a link off of a Doc Searle's weblog, and basically it's a Google map, and it's got an overlay of where all the fires are at and the intensity of the fire. Wow. When you guys, I have this link up in the show notes, but if you're not living in L.A., I don't think you can really comprehend how big this thing really is. It's huge. And it shows an overlay. And man. So I know that there's a lot of listeners in the LA area that are probably affected. My heart goes out to you, and I hope that everything turns out okay. And I hope that the fire service there gets a handle on this. You know, California, you know, they're dealing with huge budget issues. Economy's been hit hard, house prices are down, and then this is just another kick in the butt. You know, isn't it just make you want to pull your hair out? And probably, you know, I don't know if they've determined where this origination of this fire was, but, you know, usually a lot of these fires get started with cigarette butts or, you know, it's pretty sad. It really, really is. And, you know, I've been in the, in areas where they have, you know, caution signs, like every 100 feet, be careful of, you know, open flames and so forth. And this is really, really too bad. But we'll see how this turns out. And a heart goes out to you guys and hope that everything turns out okay. Okay. First article up is over from GigaOM. And, you know, a lot of publishers, and being a published author myself, I can kind of relate to some of the comments being made. But there's a lot of publishers that are scared to death of Amazon and Google's digital book efforts. We all know that, and I've mentioned on this show before, having a Kindle, I can buy books that are really hot releases, stuff in like the New York Times top 10 list. Usually I can get those books at a much reduced price. If I went into the bookstore and bought a hardback copy, it'd be $27, $30 for that hard, you know, that hardcovered copy of that book. But I can get on my Kindle for $9.99. So really the price differential is huge. And a lot of the publishers are saying, hey, you know, these are cutting into our ability to pay our authors and you know, it will affect royalties going out the door, you know, in the long run. But, you know, I hate to say this, but most first-time book authors, if they've signed a deal, they are going to make very, very little money on their book. Now, when I released my book on podcasting, I was given a decent advance, made it worthwhile to do the book, just to write the book, to take the 90 days to do it. It covered my expenses and time involved to write the book over 90 days. And then I was able to get royalties for about the first probably 2 years. I got royalty checks, and the royalty checks was a percentage of that deal. And of course, what they do is they work against advances. You pay off your advances first, because that's what you do, is you get in advance when you sign a book deal. If you've signed an actual with a regular publisher who's going to do the printing and pay for all the expenses and the copyright control and all that. So you work off your advance, and then once you work off your advance, then you get the additional money and royalties. Now, I did very, very well because the book was the first book on podcasting. So it sold very, very well, and for a first-time author, I was pretty happy with it. Now, if you're Stephen King, you're probably getting huge, huge sums of money. And those publishers rely on those $29.99 sales. Those Stephen King hardcore fans are going to go buy that hardcover book just because they can't wait. There's huge profit in that. What have they gotten the cost? The cost of the printing, right? So the printing of the book is not that much. But when you get a digital copy for $9.99, really then the amount is... the delivery cost is really, that's the only expense. So, but even though that profit margin is actually what they've done, is that Amazon is using the digital copy sales as a loss leader. And a loss leader is basically every book they sell, they lose money on. They still have to pay a certain amount of money back to the publisher. So I don't know how this all works, but as far as what Amazon actually has to pay and how they work that volume, how much they have to pay per book sale and so forth. But they're saying these ebook resellers like Sony, Amazon, Barnes & Noble could destroy publishers' profits. Well, maybe it's time for the publishers to get their act together. And, they could have developed an Amazon. They didn't have to have Barnes & Noble be the electric distributor of these books. Publishers, when I signed my contract, I authorized, matter of fact, I did it later on. I had to sign a release form saying, yes, this book can be sold digitally. Now, maybe it comes standard in contracts these days, but, I guess I can understand to a certain extent, but also it just goes to show you that there's people are going to have to get smarter in the way they're doing business in the digital age. Obviously, free books are not going to free books would decimate the market completely, especially for your renowned artists authors and so forth that put the time in to write these great books. So we'll have to see what happens. What do you guys think about the book industry? Do you think they're just crying like the music industry is, or do they have a point? And I guess your point of view would be skewed depending on if you've written a book or not. For me, it's kind of like mute point, because I wasn't expecting to make a lot of money and did very well with mine. But what do you guys think? Love to hear your comments, geeknews@gmail.com. All right, next article is from Mashable. And if you're worried about who's not following any along on Facebook, there's some pretty cool Grease Monkey scripts out there that you can add on to Firefox that we'll check every couple of days or so forth and see who has quit following you on Facebook. The script kind of looks like Quitter, and I had a Quitter account and was watching see who was quitting, and this usually 9 out of 10 times I would go and check, and the people that Quitter said were quit following were still following, so I quit using it. So we'll see how this one turns out and how it works. Really, does anyone really even care if someone quits following or not? Are you guys offended? I'm not really offended. Don't want to follow, don't follow. That's just kind of the way the ball bounces out there. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next article. This is from Apple Insider. Apple is expected to offer iPhone on U.S. carriers within a year. Now, what this has come from is a senior research analyst with Piper Jaffray, and I have no idea who that company is, whether or not they have any serious chops or not, but Apple Insider quotes this guy named Gene Munster, M-U-N-S-T-E-R. Almost sounds like a made-up name, but anyway, he's a senior research analyst, quote-unquote, from Piper Jaffray, and he took on 14 unanswered questions that surround Apple and what he expects, what his analysis shows, is that it is very likely that Apple will be looking to Verizon or even other carriers to expand the iPhone carrier base by 2010 or late to 2010. You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Obviously, love the phone, hate AT&T, and I think that's been the basic sentiment of a lot of people that are using the iPhone right now. But I think that I don't think AT&T can afford to have Verizon become a player here. I think AT&T is going to throw so much money at Apple that Apple's really going to have to swallow hard to make the jump. But I think it's really a jump they need to make. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. And really, the telltale signs should start to show up mid next year, but we won't know for a while. But we'll see. We'll see what happens here. He's got some other predictions and some other ideas about subscription TV shows on iTunes and so forth that he talks about. But the title grabber there, of course, was that Apple, he expected at least to offer iPhone on new U.S. carriers within a year. So we will see whether or not that happens. All right, how many of you use Wikipedia for a resource? I know that when I was taking college classes, every once in a while I would bounce over there and pull some information. I was very careful, though, to go back and cross-check and get some other references to make sure that the information was right. And we know that Wikipedia has really, for a long time, suffered criticism for not being super reliable. But it appears here that what's going to happen is Wikipedia, in conjunction with Google, and I don't know how this is going to work, to be honest with you, but they're going to have a optional feature called WikiTrust. It's going to color code every word of the encyclopedia based on its reliability of its author and length of time it has persisted on the page. We will see what happens here, but you know, you go to the podcast page, I think it's changed about every 3 hours by someone that thinks they invented podcasting. But if you if you're looking for this, this will be on, not on Wikipedia itself, but something called WikiTrust. It'll be part of some sort of a experiment that they're doing, at least to color code the website. So we'll see what happens with this. Think this will work, or you think it will add, or you know, what it's really going to do? It's going to give those that are out there trying to change the Wikipedia pages, it's going to make them go out and say, oh, that information hasn't been changed in a while. Maybe I need to go out there and edit that. And then it'll just completely spoil the experiment they're doing here with the WikiTrust. So we'll see what happens with this. Okay, article while we're on the register.co.uk. This is for those of you that are system administrators out there that listen to the show or have servers running on on Microsoft Internet Information Services, IIS. First of all, if you're running IIS version 5, you know, you should upgrade because, you know, that IIS 5 is running on Windows 2000 with Service Pack 4 and has not been really updated in a while. So this new bug that's out there gives attackers complete server control, and it's something that's not too hard to implement, but it's a zero-day bug that has been unknown to Microsoft at this point. Microsoft is going to make a statement about it here in a couple of days. According to Microsoft's website, it said mainstream support for IIS 5 expired in 2005, but extended support, in other words, if you're paying for it, remains in effect until July 2010, and support for Windows 2000 Service Pack 4 ends 24 months after the next Service Pack release or at the end of the product support lifecycle, whichever comes first. So, you know, I don't need – thank goodness we're not running any IIS boxes. All our stuff runs on Linux variants. But I know there's a lot of people out there who are still running Internet information services. But if you have an IIS 5 install, you definitely want to pay attention to this bug. It's pretty serious. They can get root control of your machine very, very quickly. So hopefully Microsoft will have a patch out or give you some ways to lock your machines down. So we'll keep you advised on that. I'm sure there'll be some sort of a report out from Microsoft in the next couple of days. All right, how many of you are really good at Photoshop? Personally, when it comes to graphics, I'm horrible. I really, really am. I dabble my way around with stuff. So I'm always looking for tutorials, cheat sheets, anything that can help me figure out how to get the most out of Photoshop and really There's lots of resources out there, but the folks over at webdesignerdepot.com have come up with 300-plus resources to help you become a Photoshop expert. And I was kind of looking through some of these, and there's a lot of cool stuff here. And a lot of them are just individual tutorials that gives you some ideas on how to actually do things, and that's really kind of the challenge is when you've got a picture up or you're trying to make a change, and you know, how do you actually change a color? How do you get some the color to be blended or faded and so forth? And there's lots of tutorials available. Anyway, they've got 300 resources for you to use if you want to become a Photoshop expert. Of course, this will be up in the show notes. There's a report out where Microsoft is saying that Apple is apparently or purportedly going to become the enemy of the TV industry. Microsoft is saying within 2 years, if the mainstream television business doesn't get aggressive and move its content online, now I know that Hulu, H-U-L-U, not Hula, Hulu, has, you know, the folks that are associated with that have been semi-aggressive, but if the rest of the TV industry doesn't get aggressive in moving its content online and build a critical mass of content, they're saying that traditional buyers of airtime will understand that Apple iTunes and that movement is going to do the same thing to television as it has it done to the online music business. There's some reports from The Guardian that believes that TV execs have just 2 or 3 years to adapt. And this is from an article that was in The Guardian from an interview with Microsoft Ashley Highfield, believes that TV execs have just 2 or 3 years to adapt or be thrown into chaos, just like the music industry. So, you know, I think this is has some legs. You know, more and more stuff is moving online. I think most of you that listen to the show do a large amount of online consumption of media, and I think that is just going to continue to grow. My kids do. You know, we've got an Apple TV here at the house, and what do when there's nothing really on for movie night? Well, what do? We go over to YouTube, and we watch YouTube videos. You know, some of the popular ones, the funny stuff. You know, there's always something to watch over there. So if my kids are doing a lot of that, that means a lot of other people are. And that means at some point, you know, television is going to be consumed the same way we're consuming podcasts. We're just going to go ahead and put it in a subscription base, and we're going to download it from them and watch it when we want to, where we want to. And I think the logic is correct here. But I haven't been over to Hulu in a long time and watched any content over there. I know a lot of you go over there and watch different television programs that are available. I still rely on my DVR for most of my regular TV watching, but what do you guys think? Think they're onto something here? Think Microsoft is really trying to preempt the big bad wolf, what they consider to be Apple, and trying to kickstart the industry into moving so that they don't become non-relevant in the online consumption of media space? In other words, aka Microsoft become irrelevant. So kind of a little shot at Apple there in a big way. All right, over on BBC, of course, I found this over in Space News as well and heard about it in multiple places. The Shuttle Discovery has arrived at the International Space Station on Sunday. They're going to do their first spacewalk today. They're going to be going out and doing some work on the International Space Station. They've got a record 13 people in space again, and I think they're actually going to be up there for 13 days. Everything looks good so far with the shuttle. So NASA's got this one halfway licked. And we'll see how the spacewalks go, and of course, getting Discovery back to Earth at the end of the mission. And very quickly, they're going to be turned around. The Japanese are going to be launching their space cargo vehicle. Then there's like two other. I think the Russians have got a Soyuz going up. So there's going to be a lot of traffic at the International Space Station over the next month, and then of course a follow-on mission with another construction job here. I think in October sometime. All right, over on Computer World in the security section, judge will not lower the $5 million bail on the San Francisco IT administrator has in jail. Remember, we talked about this guy a couple of shows ago where many of the charges have been dropped against him. He's really only got one remaining charge right now. He's got the charge of one count of disrupting computer services. In other words, he would not give the city their passwords to their to their servers. But they got this guy in a $5 million bail. Now, there's people that are in jail right now that have killed someone that have bails less than $5 million. The city thinks he's a flight risk and feels that he's a threat to the city network if he's cut loose. You know, they've had the guy in jail now for 14 months. 14 months. And if the city's still worried about him being a threat to their network, the IT managers in San Francisco need to be fired, because you would think by now they would have went through and cleaned everything up. But he's still being held on bail. $5 million. He's not getting out anytime soon, and they're still going forward with a court case. Just seems a little unreasonable to me. It really, really does. You know, if they've got sex offenders and people doing all other kinds of really horrible horrible crimes in jail with less bond, why is there $5 million on this guy? I just don't get it. I really don't. So maybe someone in the legal profession can talk to me about this in a comment to the to show at geeknews@gmail.com, or calling the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365. All right, have you heard about this thing that Fox is going to do? I've never seen this show. Have you guys seen The Fringe? I don't even know what this show is about. But to prime the pump for the September 17th premiere of the hot show's second season, Fringe, I guess the stars of the show, Josh Jackson, and John Noble, will tweet about the show in progress during the East and West Coast broadcast at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. I guess we're going to have a little thing going along the bottom of the show that will actually have their tweets about the show. Do we really want to see, I don't care what show you're watching, do we really want to see two stars of a show tweeting about the show while the show's going on? Give me a break. Oh, it's not even a premiere. It's a rerun. They're going to be twittering during a rerun. I guess this is an attempt at trying to, get people like me that have never seen the show to go watch it. Well, you got to give them credit for trying. Anything to gain a little audience share, right? Someone tell me what The Fringe is about. I have not a clue. All right, here. And now, let's see what Chrome is doing. Are you going to load the page, Chrome, or are you just going to sit there and show me a white blank screen? All right, Computer World has a very good article. It's a death match, Snow Leopard versus Windows 7. It's a five, six, seven-page article all about the advantages of one operating system over the other. Obviously, those of you that are Mac users, you probably have started to upgrade your machines. I actually got my upgrade disc via FedEx today. They arrived. I haven't actually put it in any machines yet. I'm kind of holding off. Actually, we'll be talking about some compatibility sites where you can look at lists of programs you may have, that see if they're compatible with Snow Leopard or not. But Computer World did a head-to-head, and it's a pretty interesting write-up. Microsoft wins a few, Apple wins a few, and with cost, Snow Leopard definitely comes out ahead at $29. You can't beat the upgrade price. So have the link up to this in the show notes. You guys can check it out, read the full articles. And I will say one thing. Based upon my utilization of Windows 7, I think Windows definitely beats them hand down in UI improvements. Definitely, I think where Apple wins is basically in their back end and some of the stuff that they've done to enable multi-core utilization for developers that go in and modify their applications to use all the cores in a computer. So I think that's really going to be the biggest advantage. Because, you know, many of us have multi-core computers, but we don't have programs that are optimized to run on those multiple cores. They still run on a single core, and they're not smart enough to, get into load sharing across multiple cores, or actually use a core that doesn't have as much loading and so forth. So the work that the folks did at Apple was basically give the giveaway for developers to more easily integrate their applications to cross-load and use these multi-core processors. So we'll see what happens. Of course, that's going to be a long-term return on investment for Apple. I think it was a smart for them to do. They probably should have done that in Windows 7. Have not heard anything in Windows 7 that is anywhere close to any of that type of functionality, but it would be smart on Microsoft's part to make it easy for developers as well. So anyway, again, I'll have this link up in the show notes for you to check out. All right, over on Tech Dirt, this is any of you NFL fans, you guys know that I don't watch too much sports. Just not enough time and lost interest a number of years ago. But I remember that there used to, you know, if you live very close to a stadium, if the stadium's not full, you're not going to see the TV broadcast because of a blackout. They basically, the sports state, the stadiums have to get so much percentage sold out before they unlock the a television broadcast to the surrounding area. Now, when I was growing up in Michigan, I lived in a community that was about 110, 115 miles away from where the Lions played. And we were far enough away that the blackout rules did not apply. But I had buddies that lived in Detroit and Dearborn and surrounding areas where if the Lions didn't have a sellout crowd, that they weren't getting the show on the television. So the NFL now seems to all of a sudden be worried that because of the economy, that attendance to the games are dropping this season. And because this attendance drop with these blackout rules in effect, number one, they're going to have less fans in the stadium. Number two, they're not going to be able to broadcast to the local community. So what's going to happen? People are going to lose interest in their own teams and their own hometowns because they're not, they can't afford to go to the game, but they can't see it because it's blacked out. You know, you'd think that the NFL would get a clue. Don't you think they should get a clue and say, hey, maybe during this bad economy, we should just, you know, either lower the level of, you know, attendance that has to be at the games before we, you know, we cut loose the networks to televise locally. I think this is going to be a wake-up call for the NFL. Does baseball or basketball do that? I don't think they do, do they? I think it's only the NFL that has that blackout like that. But once again, you know, stupid rules that are invoked years ago coming back to, kick these guys in the butt. All right, a company called DigiProtect. Now, this is a company that has been working with copyright holders where they were purposely putting their own, those copyright holders' content online and peer-to-peer networks and really kind of putting them out as bait to see who would download them. And then when they caught people downloading the material that they had put out as bait, they would log the IP, get the information, and then basically go after those folks for a settlement. You know, isn't that kind of like entrapment? You know, I can't – this is just totally – you know, beyond this company actually doing that, there's got to be some sort of a law against this type of an action. But this company is basically the individuals that work there all work on a performance basis. They earn money based upon how much money they collect. But they have stated that they get the legal rights from the company to distribute the movies to stores, and with these rights, we can sue illegal downloaders. Then we take legal action in every country possible, concentrating on the places where such action will be profitable. So they have authorized distribution. So they're putting these movies out on the peer-to-peer networks. They're waiting until someone comes along and says, oh, there's that new release, that movie. Let me grab it. And then they log the IP. Then they go after them legally. And this is extortion. This is entrapment. Why is this? How can this company, again, how can this company get away with this? This blows me away. If this article is true, and Tech Dirt, they usually don't put something up like this unless they cover their butt. But come on. You know, hey, let me put this $100 bill on the counter here. Let's go in the back room. Let's put a camera on that $100 bill. And when someone comes in and steals it, when they walk out the door, we're going to arrest them. You know, that's the mentality. You know, something, you put something out there like that, it makes honest people just, you know, go out and grab, hey, oh, that's available? Okay, let me download this. This is very questionable, very shady, very shady, very, very shady. Now, to top it off, recording industry lobbies saying politicians worried about users' rights are disgusting. All right, Canadian listeners, you need to listen up. Last week, there was a town hall meeting in Toronto about the new copyright laws in Canada. And there's going to be more information about this later. But apparently, two parliament members, Olivia Chow and Charlie Angus, who have been supporters of consumer rights, you guys need to support these two people in Canada, folks, who've been supportive of consumer rights, have been called out by the music industry lobbyists for distributing a disgusting flyer. And I guess the reason so is we gained an interview with a former musician in a popular punk band. And basically, this punk band was saying, hey, we talked about the importance of consumer rights and to tell Canadians, don't allow the government to follow through with a DMCA-style law in this country. If, you know, it could be very detrimental to artists and so forth. Well, anyway, these lobbyists have basically said that they can hardly contain themselves to read this flyer because it's disgusting and the politicians associated with it. And I'm just like, wow. So, hey, Canadians, go out there and support Olivia Chow and Charlie Angus. Get behind them because it looks like you've got a friend there protecting your fair use rights and so forth. All right, the A&E. Of course, the A&E is famous for a lot of pretty cool television shows right now. It's one of the – I think the dog is on A&E here from Hawaii, Dog Chapman from Dog the Bounty Hunter, and several other shows. And A&E is going to court to defend fair use of a 12-second clip of music. Apparently, this decision to – A&E's decision to use a 12-second sound – 12 seconds of the sound Rocky is part of a TV show that they aired. I guess it was City Confidential, and it was involving some football team or something in Tennessee, and I guess several football teams in Tennessee use Rocky as part of their theme song or something to that effect. So A&E is saying, hey, this was relevant. This was, you know, we tried to make this as realistic as possible, but the license holder to the song Rocky Top, that's the actual name of the song, is basically saying, hey, you have to pay for that utilization. And A&E is saying, no. This is a fair use. We don't have to pay anything for it. So we'll see what happens with this. This will be an interesting case, and this one could go a long way, and hopefully A&E fights to the end if the initial decision doesn't go their way. But it could be a case that would set some precedents on fair use, and it could really help media creators in a big way if they were able to win this one. So again, the name of the song was Rocky Top. I've never heard of it, so I have to go back and check that out. But apparently the copyright holder wasn't too happy with Annie's utilization. All right, over on Wired, there was a excerpt of an interview from the, I guess the Obama administration hired a guy by the name of John Barry to head the Office of Personnel Management earlier this year. Now, OPM, I believe in the government, is basically the HR department for the U.S. government. They set policies. They do set up federal workers' medical plans. I think there's a whole bunch of stuff that they do. It's basically the HR division of the U.S. government. And this Wired article goes into really how working for the government and getting hired from the government uses practices that were developed back in the 50s, and the OPM has really not modernized to attract young talent and so forth. They haven't really gotten their cool factor on and basically using social media like Facebook, Twitter, and so forth to kind of, you know, pre-qual people or, you know, pre-screen people and so forth. But the Obama administration is trying to update the OPM hiring image and the way they actually go about getting people, and basically talking about a federal workforce that continues to age, and that there's very few young people actually getting into federal employment, which seems kind of odd to me. You think that there would still be, you know, constant ebb and flow of people retiring and new people coming in, but they're working to improve the way they into their hiring process. And, you know, kind of get this thing up to date and make it more modern. So we'll see what happens with this. Anyone, you know, Bree, are you familiar? I know Bree's one of the longtime listeners of the show. I know she works for the federal government. Are you seeing a, you know, when you're for your job hires, how are you guys doing that these days? You guys have to go through this long, laborious process that's, you know, not super efficient, or, you know, anyone that's listening to the show that works for the feds that are involved in hiring at all or has any type of direct knowledge, I'd love to hear from you to kind of, you know, if you can talk about it, what you have to go through to hire somebody out of college or somebody new, or the process you go to finding people and qualifying people. Obviously, you're not going over to, you know, some of the major sites to that have, you know, online resumes and so forth. Now, I know the Bush administration, it had Monster.com on contract for a while. I don't know if that's still in place or not, but, you know, it's obvious to me that if you've ever seen a federal online application form too, which I filled out once just before I was getting ready to retire with the potential of, you know, having a federal job as a possibility, there is a it's pretty antiquated. It really, really is. But anyway, I'd love to hear some feedback from listeners in the show on what they're seeing on the process and what's happening within OPM, if they're actually implementing anything that's cool that's helping attracting young, talented new workers to the federal government. I knew one thing that they implemented here, at least in some places, is a system called NSPS, and that is a perform to serve, and really what it's what they're attempting to do is kind of weed out some of the dead weight. You know, obviously there's been a lot of, you know, most people think that there's a lot of inadequacies or inefficiencies within the federal government, and one thing that was invented was this, or actually implemented, was a system called NSPS, where people are evaluated in a more fair or actually more realistic way. And people, it's supposed to kind of weed out those people that are underperformers. I don't know what success they've had with it or not, but I know that that system is in place to some of the federal workers here in Hawaii. I don't know how widespread it is, though, because I don't think everyone has adopted it. But probably a good topic of conversation at some point down the road to see how technology is used within the federal government. All right, over on browsersforthebetter.com, 1 in 8 Americans struggle to have enough to eat. So in cooperation with the Microsoft Corporation, for every download of Windows Internet Explorer 8 from this particular site, they're going to continue to donate 8 meals to Feeding America. And during the Hunger Action Month, they're going to double that donation for people upgrading from Windows Internet Explorer 6. So if you are a Windows Internet Explorer 6 user and you want to help feed some people, upgrade via browserforthebetter.com. Actually, this site is actually hosted by Microsoft. Let me see if I can read what the actual it says. Only complete downloads in Windows Internet Explorer 8 through the browserforbetter.com from June 8, 2009 through today's the last day. No. The end of the month will be September 30, 2009. Qualify for the charitable donations to Feeding America. Microsoft is donating at least $1.15 per download, with a maximum of $2.30 per download by users of Windows and Internet Explorer 6 after August 24, 2009, to Feeding America, up to a maximum of $1 million. Meals are used for illustrative purposes only. Meal conversion is effective until June 30, 2010. That's the official disclaimer at the bottom of the website. So I guess Feeding America is a private organization, and Microsoft is through downloads through the website giving away up to $1 million to the organization. So help feed some hungry Americans by upgrading your browser at that website. I have the link up in the show notes. Those of you that have EC2 instances running that are actually playing around with Amazon cloud services, there is now a way in which you can bring up a management console to actually watch your EC2 instance average CPU utilization, average disk reads, average disk writes, max network in and out, CPU utilization, and so forth. So this is a pretty cool tool, and I don't know how long this has been around, but I found the link to this today. So if you're running an EC2 instance, of course we've had that event on the roundtable talking about the EC2 and how you can do some pretty cool stuff in a short order with a at a very low price, doing testing of sites and so forth. At least you can see how much utilization you're making of the instance, whether or not you're getting your money worth out. So the AWS Management Console announced on the Amazon Web Services blog. I have the link up to it in the show notes for you. Oh, we're running long here. How many of you have kids in college? Are they worried that they're not going to be able to pay their college bills once they get out because the economy is so bad? Apparently, a lot of college students are worried about this, and the college students that are actually just graduated this last year who are starting to pay back student loans are finding that they're having a very tough time of it. So are you guys seeing this at all in the space? And how many of you have kids that are having trouble making their college loan payments? And I don't know what the rules are behind that. I guess I should probably check that out, seeing that I'm going to probably be helping pay some of those types of loans off here soon. But anyway, this was an article over on USA Today. Got a link here from on Mark Cuban's website talking about success and motivation. He dissects a letter that was made by someone looking for a job to a specific company. And I think this is for those of you that are on the job hunt, this might be worthy reading for you. I have the link up to it in the show notes here. All right, over on Engadget, they're announcing netbook sales growth doubles in quarter two of 2009. So it should not come as a surprise to you that those of you that are netbook users. They found that shipments grew an impressive 40% compared to the same quarter last year, as opposed to 22% for plain old laptops. So this is pretty the netbook phenomenon continues to grow, and sales continue to outpace regular netbooks. All right, if you have known to go out to a bar and have a drink or two and then do what you're not supposed to do and get behind the wheel of your automobile, a Toyota very soon can be bringing to market a breathalyzer ignition interlock. And I think we've seen these in the United States already, where you actually, for people that have gotten DUIs a couple of times, have to have those in their vehicles. They actually have to blow into straw, and it actually lets you start the car if it doesn't detect alcohol. But Toyota has gotten this as a standard feature available on vehicles starting next year. So probably a good thing in Japan. I don't think this will sell very well as an option in American vehicles. But again, if you have a Toyota and you have been convicted of a DUI, you may not have any choice. The judge may actually make you get that option. All right, scientists say that new technology could make manufacture of OLE displays as inexpensive as printing newspapers. Scientists from the Riken Center in Japan have found a new way to make OLEDs using what they're calling electrospray deposited polymer film. And the creator of this technique has said that in a very short period, creating OLED displays really could be as inexpensive as printing a newspaper. This is that's a pretty big claim. We'll keep our eyes peeled on how this technology advances. If that's the case, we're going to see millions of OLED displays and probably walls of OLED displays rolled out. Hey, I want to give you guys check out the article on Geek News Central. It's an article written by Tom. He's one of our bloggers over there. Article entitled Camtasia for Mac. He's got a good write-up on Camtasia for Mac. You guys know I'm a big Camtasia fan. And, he demos the Camtasia for you on a YouTube video. It's the bottom of the article. I have that linked up in the show notes. You guys can check it out. Mac users, you don't know what you're missing if you have not utilized Camtasia before. It's a great program. Over on Gizmodo, astronomers are sending robots to stargaze in a very in a place that's not real friendly to humans, but astronomers are rejoicing that they found the best place on Earth for astronomical observation. It's also in one of the worst places for humans. It's down in Antarctica. It's called Ridge A, and the area provides such a clear view of space that a modestly sized telescope is as powerful as the largest telescopes anywhere else on Earth. And really what they're finding here is because it's so clear that, it's basically they're getting the scientific results out of the telescopes that they put down there at a cost of about $10 a kilo as compared to thousands of dollars per kilo, for what it would take to get an actual object into space. So the National Science Foundation is getting a lot of research out of this. at a relatively low cost. Now, it still seems pretty expensive to me, but you know, considering you got to fly this stuff in, set it up, get solar in, generation power, whatever else is needed, but still pretty cheap as compared to putting something in space, and they're getting some great science out of this. So pretty cool what they're doing down in Antarctica. It'll be probably the next location we're going to put some big telescopes, I would imagine. All right, on over snowleopard.wiki.com, there's a list of software that is compatible with Snow Leopard. I have this link up in the show notes. So if you want to know the applications you've got on your Mac are compatible with Snow Leopard before you upgrade, you got a huge list here. And, you know, maybe you've got a, one of those unique programs you're running. Maybe you can add to this as well and say whether or not it is compatible. Hey, I wanted to give an update here on Roz Savage. Roz is, of course, rowing across the Pacific. She's on day 99 of her row. She has made the decision. Actually, her assistant has flew to Fiji. She's and they're going to be continuing on to Tarawa. The plan is for Roz to land in Tarawa. She was not able to make the island Tuvalu, I guess is where she was attempting to get to. It just was too, you know, there was too much things going against the row, winds and intertropical dispersion zone and all kinds of crazy stuff that was going on. Her water, she's actually got a little bit of a issue as well in that the water generator has broken down. So now she's on using water reserves, canned water, and she can go to a pump action if she needs to, where she can pump for 2 hours a day on this device to get enough fresh water to, you know, basically enough for substance. So it looks like that she is going to be landing. They've actually told her to slow the rowing down because it's taken them so long to get into Tarawa because of visas or flights in or something like that, that they've asked her to slow the rowing down. They're going to be getting in on September 8th, so I don't know what type of connectivity there is out of Tarawa, but anyway, they're in Fiji. Her team is in Fiji right now, and you can, of course, check on Roz's progress at rozsavage.com. They have turned off her tracker. The team is still following her tracker. Roz has basically kind of went communications blackout for a couple of days, but we'll see what happens here. I'm looking forward to hearing from Roz when she gets on the ground and gets back to somewhere where there's good connectivity. We're going to try to do a follow-up interview with her. As you know, she was here in the studio and did an interview before she took off. But she is nearing the end of this second stage of her Pacific row, and I'm sure she is very much looking forward to getting to dry land. So her team is trying to get in place, but we'll keep you advised. There was a good article on CNN as well. I have the link up to that in the show notes. Okay, running long here. Let me go ahead and get right into the voicemails that have come in. First one is really short. I bet you this is one of those robocallers. We'll see what we've got here, and then we've got a longer second voicemail. Of course, if you have a voicemail comment you want to make, +1-619-342-7365. Let me go ahead and play the first voicemail here.
Press 2 for my voicemail, or press 9 to be removed.
Yeah, it was a robocaller. So let me go ahead and get into one that I think is from an audience member. Let's check this out.
Hey, Todd, this is Clint.
Hey, Clint.
That was an invite for Google Voice.
Oh.
Is what I was looking for. I'm sorry if I said Gmail, because I do have that. I have a couple of Gmail accounts. I was multitasking when I called you Wednesday, so that's
don't worry.
Why I sound a little bit confused there.
Hey, Clint, don't worry. I multitask way too much, and as you can tell by the show, I never make any mistakes, right? Clint, send me an email, and I'll get you a Google Voice invite right away, okay? I'll try to get you one right out. I didn't pick it up from the last show. So just, you know, it's easier just to email me, say, hey, Todd, I need a Google Voice invite, and I'll get one to you as quick as I can. All right, let me go ahead and look and see what we've actually got in the way of email comments. And I have a long one in here that first one's from Ron. He's a buddy of mine here in Hawaii. He said, hey, Todd, I love the new intro. very creative and well-suited to the podcast. One thing, though, where is the modem? Absolutely essential in my book. All progress into the future must always be mindful of the past, and the modem has been consistent throughout and something that I've always heard you defend when challenged as to why it was still in your podcast intro. I seem to remember you saying it all started that way, and I would like to always have it present in my intro. Some food for thought. Maybe the creator of the intro can find a clever way to include it. He seems to have mad editing skills. Ron, you're absolutely correct. The modem, really, this is how it all started many, many years ago for me, getting that 2400 baud modem, or actually 300 baud modem, getting it connected up, running the bulletin board, and the progression we made through all these years to this show. Yep, you're right. It all started with the modem. So, Joe, let's put your mad editing skills to work, my friend, and see if somehow we can mix in the modem sound with the intro. It's got to be there, right? Come on, that's the classic thing that really has to kind of stick with the show. So, Ron, thanks for that and keeping me honest. I appreciate it. Got a very long email from Nancy. She says, hey, first, love the podcast. I'm up to May 21st on it. I'm relatively new to listening to podcasts. It took a while to get it. But now that I have gotten it, I'm getting caught up on all my favorites, and I've pared the list down to just a few. Mike Smith's collaboration with Carrie Holtzman, The Going Linux Show, NPR's Car Talk, NPR's Planet Money, and NPR's Technology Podcast. I think I'm on course to eventually get current with all of them. She goes on to say, Todd, there's ongoing saga, a battle of wills, perhaps, between me and AT&T over the wireless connection via a Sierra wireless adapter called Laptop Connect. I'm documenting it on a blog at www.southernfriedyanqui.com. On sort of a play-by-play databasis, it's almost getting day-to-day. It has really gotten ridiculous with AT&T standing firm in the statement that they don't guarantee service 24/7, and I am contending that there's a huge difference between not guaranteeing 24/7 service and regular document or predictable lapse in services. Every Saturday and Sunday, I lose my internet service. We were using dial-up, but we got frustrated because the kids' teachers want the kids using some of the reinforcement tools that just don't load well over dial-up. Cellular wireless isn't a whole lot better, and it's far less reliable. But every weekend, without fail, some point on Saturday, the connection will drop and never pick it back up until sometime Monday morning after 7. I leave for work at 7. It's never working by that time. Since it never picks up late at night or early in the morning, I have trouble believing the problem is the number of users. 5 a.m. on Sunday morning is just not likely to be a heavy usage time. Also, the hours of service for tech support are 9 to 6 Monday through Saturday, and they're closed on Sunday. The drops have been happening earlier and earlier as the weeks go on until today it was almost 9 a.m. Last week it was 2:30. A month ago it wasn't until 6:30 and 7. I spoke with a gentleman on Thursday to the effect that he was going to call me late this evening Saturday to see if we were still having troubles because we just can't understand this thing when it's working and think we're going to get anywhere. He called me while we were at the skating rink and I left a voicemail. We got home around 5. I tried to call at 5:30 and the center was closed. So on Monday morning I picked this thing back up again. It's definitely going to be worth fighting to get the early termination fee, which is basically what this is all about. They say there's nothing wrong. They say the service is within the contract. I'm going with WildBlue. I already have the equipment and an appointment for installation, but the problem with that is going to be VPN and Citrix connections. Satellite isn't the way to go if you have to work remotely, but we are so far out in the sticks that our options are dial-up, cellular, or satellite. The signal strength is not the problem, but we have a super strong signal. The reason I want to get this out on the blogs is because AT&T doesn't care about one residential customer. I want AT&T to understand that I might be just one residential customer, but I am one residential customer with a voice that is heard by tens of thousands of blog visitors and podcast listeners. Those visitors and listeners influence corporate decisions. If a company is selling wireless services for its road warriors, AT&T may not, in fact, probably isn't the best option. Oh, and Verizon doesn't service our zip code at all. Yes. We're pretty remote and dial-up was slow, but it always worked. We've already terminated our landline service because of both of us having cell phones. Without the dial-up internet service, there was no reason to keep it. Regardless of not being able to connect remotely to working from home, it will be nice for more than one computer to connect the internet at a time. I'd appreciate it if your listeners would read through the blog at southernfriedyanqui.com to follow the story. I'm documenting it from my own point of view, but I'm being honest and clear about everything that is said and done. If AT&T does concede that they are not providing services outlining the service contract, I will tell the world. If this ends up in small claims court, I will tell the world. Yes, I'll spend $150 to recover $145 because AT&T won't show up and I'll win, and the world will know. I have trouble believing that a fair-minded judge will look at the fact that service drops predictably every weekend and still judge the providers providing service within terms of contract. I enjoy the podcast and the show notes. I pick on something of value with every listen. Keep on keeping on. Nancy, I tell you what, normally I don't read emails this long, but I wanted to because I think this is something where you need to continue to push back on AT&T. I'm not familiar with this particular service that AT&T has with their Sierra it's basically their Wi-Fi or EVDO service. But yeah, if it's dropping every whip stitch like that on the weekends, something is definitely wrong there. So keep pushing back, and I'll have the link up to your blog in the show notes. Hopefully any other people that have a problem with AT&T's wireless connection will ping you back as well. But thanks for sharing your bad experience so far with AT&T. And it just goes to show you that not only are they losing in the iPhone arena, they continue to lose in this arena as well. All right, got an email from Frank saying Wachovia Bank has sent out a warning. They're going to limit access to their website to IE, Firefox, Safari, and the AOL browser. They still have a browser? The only browser listed that is a Linux compatible is Firefox. Nothing for Effany, Conqueror, or any of the other Linux browsers. So anyway, he wanted us to know that Wachovia Bank is limiting access to their on-site to those particular browsers. And it probably is a security issue related. But thanks, Frank, for that. Got an email from Keith. He says, Todd, due to my busy schedule, I've been able to keep an eye on the news and even the time to listen to for the past 2 months. I just recently have found that there is a new draft of Bill Senate 773, Cybersecurity Act 2009, that released sometime earlier this month. I've been spending about 2 hours or longer trying to find more than just an excerpt from the newest draft, but have not found such an updated doc. Might you know where I could get access to an updated copy? So anyone out there know where Keith can get an access to Senate Bill 773, Cybersecurity Act of 2009, and he'd like to see changes to the introduction of the bill since it was introduced in April, and basically wants to contact his representative if he feels something out of place. Keith is out of Ohio, so anyone that has access to some information on that, definitely send me a link. Hey, Trucker Tom sent me an email on a single molecule image. This is amazing, folks. For the very first time, scientists have been able to take an image of the delicate inner structure of a pentosine molecule. It's been imaged with an atomic force microscope. So in other words, a single molecule has been imaged for the first time. This is just pretty extraordinary. Link will be up in the show notes. You guys got to check it out. For nothing else, for those of you that have done any type of biology and worked with the science at all, I think you're going to be pretty astounded how close the scientists have come to actually, from a book demonstrating what a molecule looks like to what they've actually been able to see from within this image. So very cool stuff. Hey, Trucker Tom sent me a link, too, to the dual-screen laptop on sale by Christmas. Thanks for that, Trucker Tom. Got that on the last show. And Bo from Sweden, he said, hey, Todd, thanks for your nice show. I'm listening Saturday morning. I'm 12 hours ahead of you. It's 0848 here and 2048 at your place. Yes, we have 24-hour clocks in Sweden. No AM, PM. I registered my Kullmar, KULLMAR.SE domain on the 4th of November, 1987. I used it for UUCP mail at the time. I believe it is one of the first 50 domains in Sweden.SE. I was a bit surprised that you were so late with your domain. What can I say, Bo? I'm just, I was late to the scene. 1987, I don't think I owned a computer at that time. I didn't have enough money to own a computer. Oh boy. But thanks for your email on that, and thanks for being early, Bo. Got an email actually, what was this? Got an email here from Pete, and waiting for the email to load. He says, Firefox, I currently use version 3.5.2. And I have the cache problems also, plus I'm always running into content for which Firefox does not have any add-on display or play. I've been using Firefox since about the first of the year. However, I can't say that I see any real advantages. I still have to use Microsoft IE for some tasks. I do like Chrome, but even with Chrome, I have to revert to IE for some tasks. He goes on to say about RSS. I do like RSS. For me, it's a simple and I like simple things. I harvest all my podcasts using Podnova, install them on a Rio Carbon. Yes, I have an iPod, but find the Rio Carbon to be a much superior player. I also listen to Audible books on the Rio, and its bookmarking features work flawlessly. Thanks, Pete, for that. I appreciate it. And Greg, you got me, my friend. Okay, the Moon Rock. We talked about the Moon Rock that was, quote-unquote, a petrified wood. Well, got a correction to the show. Hey, Todd, sometimes you are in such a hurry to get interesting news items posted, you sometimes miss the punchline on what the article is all about. The article isn't alleging that a piece of petrified wood was actually found on the moon. What is alleging is that the rock given to former Dutch Prime Minister William Dress by then U.S. Ambassador J. William Millendorf, whether Millendorf was playing a trick on Dress or was a victim of a hoax is unknown. Bottom line, nobody's claiming petrified wood came from the moon, just that the purported moon rock isn't what it claimed to be. Take care, Greg. Greg, I read the headline, the first two paragraphs, and bit in hook, line, and sinker. Thanks for the correction. I appreciate it. We are way long tonight, folks. Mike, thanks for your comment on the intro. Dan, I'm glad you finally got your Pogo plug. I sent that along about 3 weeks ago. I can't believe it took that long. But congratulations on that. Got an email from... I think that's it. I got more here, but we're running long. All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging for a long show tonight. Geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com is where you can send emails to. Voicemail hotline, +1-619-342-7365. +1-619-342-7365. Everyone have a great week. We'll be back with you on Friday for the regular show. For those of you that have come up on Ustream, hey, I'll be here Thursday night late recording the show, Hawaii time. So hope that you come out as well. Everyone have a great week. Be safe out there. Take care. It's been my pleasure to bring you the show. We'll see you soon. Aloha.